Another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. You want to learn more about Hope? You can at investinghope.com. You can read our blog. You can learn about the work that we do. You can also volunteer there. You can submit information to learn more about how you can partner with us. We would enjoy that. investinghope.com. You can also listen to the archive of the show. You can listen to it in podcast form. There at investinghope.com, the TuneIn app, Google Play app, iTunes, wherever podcasts are found. Or if you are a radio person, you can listen, of course, live every single Tuesday afternoon at 5 o'clock on Joy 620 on 102.5. And so we would FM and we would just enjoy for you to listen any way that you can. You can also listen online. And so there's a lot of ways to hear my voice, which has been my dream and my goal my whole life, is that more people could hear my voice while they're mowing their yard or whatever it is they're doing. So thank you so much for tuning in. Today we got a lot to talk about. As I came on last week, right before I came on the air, right before I recorded the show, we found out that Planned Parenthood, in a meeting behind closed doors, decided they were going to fire their president. Their new president that's been in office for 8 months, been in that position for 8 months. She was fired, Leanna Wynn. And so a lot went on with that. Normally, Planned Parenthood is very good about keeping on message and keeping everything with a very structured rollout. But this did not occur last week. And so we found out that behind closed doors, they were having a meeting. Then we saw a tweet from Leanna Wynn that said simply, I just found out I was fired. I'll have more to say soon. She put out a statement. And so my initial thought, and if you want to hear my initial thoughts, you can listen to last week's show. That would be the best way to do it. I'm not going to rehash all of that. But I do think it's important to kind of go over some things. Since last week's show, Leanna Wynn put out an op-ed in the New York Times that I think is kind of going against the grain of what typically happens with the abortion lobbies. They are very much unified, very much structured, very much, hey, this is how we handle these type of scenarios. And instead, we get an op-ed from in the New York Times, which I find it interesting. Let's just be completely real and honest. Would the New York Times allow an op-ed from, say, Tom Glessner, the president of NIFLA? Yeah, probably not. But they allow an op-ed in the New York Times from, of course, the president of the abortion giant. And it was interesting reading through that, and I'll read through some of it here in just a second, to give you an idea of how she's going against the grain. And she really kind of bought into the narrative that Planned Parenthood has been pushing. Now, a lot of us on the pro-life side have been watching this and going, look, they say that abortion is 3% of what they do, but that's not true. Abortion is the bulk of what they do. They are, in fact, a lobbyist firm that also provides abortions. They're that's really all that they care about. That's where their money comes from. When a couple years ago, when we saw the videos of them having conversations about selling body parts of babies that had been aborted, that is who they are. And the reason they took David DeLaden to court is because that is who they are, and they didn't want people to know it. And so when you see this from a pro-lifer standpoint, from my standpoint, that, you know, I'm reading through this and looking at this stuff all the time, this doesn't surprise me. When they brought in Leanna Wynn, when they brought in when Cecile Richards stepped down and they brought in a new president, the focus was, look, for the first time, Planned Parenthood is hiring a physician. Why? Because we are about women's health, and we want to show you this is all about reproductive rights. It's all about women's health. It's not about lobbying. It's not about abortion legislation and those type things. It's simply about protecting women. And so they hire a physician. And what does she come out and say? She says, look, I'm a physician. I know this stuff forwards and backwards. I'm a doctor. I'm a medical professional. Let me take the reins and run with it. And we're not going to be just the policy arm. We are going to be the best place to provide care for women in this country. Well, Fast forward 8 months, and they're meeting behind closed doors, and they're firing that physician. Why? Well, some are arguing, well, she wasn't the best leader, and we had to bring in coaches to help her how to deal with the staff. No. The reason they had to do that is because she was coming in and saying, look, we are a medical organization first and foremost, not a political organization. And the staff and the board and everyone involved was going, whoa. No, we make our living in abortion. That is core to who we are. And the only way we make our living in abortion is if we also make our living in Washington, D.C. and in the state houses across this country. And we are going to be that political policy giant that we have been, that they were the last 8, 12, 15 years. Well, what we find is philosophical differences came to a head, and it ended up with the president leaving in a very messy firing. And so here's her op-ed, Leanna Wynn's op-ed, in the New York Times that was released back on July 19th. And I'll read you some of that. Now, it says, last week, I left my position as the president and chief executive of Planned Parenthood. In my farewell message to colleagues, I cited philosophical differences over the best way to protect reproductive health. While the traditional approach has been through prioritizing advocating for abortion rights, I have long believed that the most effective way to advance reproductive health is to be clear that it is not a political issue, but a healthcare one. I believe we could expand support for Planned Parenthood and ultimately for abortion access by finding common ground with a large majority of Americans who can unite behind the goal of improving the health and well-being of women and children. When the board hired me to chart this new course, I knew that it would be challenging. Few organizations, let alone organizations under constant siege, accept change easily. Indeed, there was immediate criticism that I did not prioritize abortion enough. And I will take a break for just a second. What was interesting too with what she did when she came in, she actually tweeted out very soon after being named president of Planned Parenthood. She tweeted, "Hey, abortion is core to what we do," and I thought that was a slip up. Because what you find is you never find the abortion giant, Planned Parenthood, saying that abortion is core to what they do. What you find is them saying abortion is 3% of what we do. It's certainly part of women's health, but it is not the core to who we are. But she tweeted out, it is the core of what we do. And now she's saying, look, it is not about politics. It is about taking care of women. And she said, while I'm passionately committed to protecting abortion access, I do not view it as a standalone issue. As one of the few national healthcare organizations with a presence in all 50 states, Planned Parenthood's mandate should be to promote reproductive healthcare as part of a wide range of policies that affect women's health and public health. Another area of contention was my attempt to depoliticize Planned Parenthood. The organization and the causes it stands for have long been in the crosshairs of political attacks. In the last few months, 7 states have passed laws banning abortion before many women even know that they are pregnant. And then she goes further, I had been leading our organization's fights against these attacks and believe they offer even more reason for Planned Parenthood to emphasize its role in providing essential health care to millions of underserved women and families. People depend on Planned Parenthood for breast exams, cervical cancer screenings, HIV testing, and family planning. To counter those who associate the organization with only abortion and use this misconception to attack its mission, I wanted to tell the story of all its services, and in so doing, to normalize abortion care as the health care it is. You see, so she goes on and on in the New York Times. So she spent her time saying, look, Planned Parenthood has been this political giant for a long time, but I want to get us to shift. I want to shift our mission back to taking care of women, providing medical care, cervical cancer screenings, HIV testing, and also we perform abortions. That was her mindset. But listen, folks, that was never going to be the case. If you look at Planned Parenthood's numbers over the last few years, in every category, every single category, they have declined in numbers. Except for, guess what? Abortion. That's the only place they haven't declined. Abortion has increased when it comes to the work that they do, but in every other area, they have seen a decline. And just to put this into perspective, Planned Parenthood performs roughly a third of all abortions in this country. Have you done the math on that? Well, I have. And so a third of all abortions in this country is roughly 330,000 abortions a year. Do you know how many abortions that is every single day? Now, they would say, well, we're not open every day, which makes it even worse. But if you divide that number by 365 days in a year, that's 904 abortions every single day in this country. Every single day. So let's then go, okay, well, what's that divided by 24 hours? How many abortions are they doing an hour? That's 37 abortions every single hour in this country. That's just inside of the walls of Planned Parenthood. So when you provide those type of numbers, it's not going to be a surprising thing when someone comes in to lead the organization and they say, Hey, I've been listening to y'all for years and you have said that abortion is only 3% of what we do. So why are we not focusing more on these other things? And I wasn't in the room, but I can imagine the answer would have been something like this. Well, here's the thing. We don't focus on those other things as much because what puts money in the bank for us is abortion. Billions of dollars. Look, for those other services we perform, we're going to get reimbursed $500 million from the federal government. So we're not worried about that. Those numbers are going to take care of themselves. And frankly, we don't even care if those numbers decline. We don't really care how many pregnancy tests we offer, how many ultrasounds we offer. And frankly, the only way that a Planned Parenthood is going to offer an ultrasound is if you, in fact, say, I want an abortion. They're not going to give you an ultrasound just because. That's going to be part of the abortion service. 328,000 to 330,000 abortions every single year. So what I would encourage you to do is we shouldn't be hateful and attack Dr. Nguyen and the former president of Planned Parenthood. She should be held accountable, certainly. And you can't gloss over the fact that she was agreed to be the leader of an organization. She had to have seen these numbers. She knew these numbers that were providing 330,000 abortions every single year. But now what I do is I pray for this doctor. I pray that her eyes would be open to see the destruction that abortion has caused across not just this country, but this planet, but certainly in this country since 1973. And so we pay attention to these things, and I think it was bold of her to come out and write that op-ed. I doubt that Planned Parenthood Federation, the organization, came out and said, yeah, go ahead, write that. We would love for you to tell that we disagreed with you when it came to women's health. But ultimately, what she did was confirm what many of us already knew, that Planned Parenthood is a giant lobbyist organization that performs abortions. That's their heart, that's their soul, that's their mission. It isn't about women's health. It isn't about providing care for women. Because frankly, if it was about providing care for women, they would offer all of their services at no cost, including abortion. The reason folks even walk to an abortion clinic is because of obstacles in their life. And Planned Parenthood sees those obstacles. Abortion clinics sees those obstacles and they pounce on it and they take money from these women in vulnerable situations. We'll talk more when we come back. Ways of higher, the ways of higher than all of my ways. Far beyond what I can see, you're higher. The ways of higher, for now and always. Far beyond what I can see, you're higher. So as we continue the conversation, we started with this afternoon with the with Planned Parenthood news. And so the reason we started there is because it was big news coming in to last week's show and there was an op-ed. And so it's important that we know what's going on, but it's also important as we look from a pro-life perspective and we try to watch and see what's going on around us and what that means. And can we look into this and say, okay, well now the momentum is shifting or we're seeing some change. I think what we are seeing is an organization that is struggling to find success when the Oval Office is not in their back pocket. And so the previous administration in Washington met frequently with Planned Parenthood organization. Planned Parenthood was able to write a lot of the policy when it came to abortion, when it came to what they would call reproductive rights. The platform that you saw from those that were pro-choice or pro-abortion, it came straight from NARAL and Planned Parenthood and the abortion lobby. And so we see all of that. Well, when things shift and you don't have that person in the White House, and you see with the movie Unplanned, and you see different laws be passed in different states where people are going, hold on, that's not what I signed up for. When you start to see that the platform now is, it used to be safe, legal, rare. Look, that was what we were told. We were told, look, no one wants an abortion. No one is pro-abortion. Abortion should be simply safe, legal, and rare. That is what, that's been the mantra, that's been the narrative for a long time. Well, at some point it shifted. Then we started to hear, well, it's a blob of cells, it's a clump of cells, blob of tissue, it's not really a life yet. And then you hear some even folks that are pro-choice say, look, no one wants a third trimester abortion, and no one's in favor of that. We don't support that, but we do support abortion in its earliest stages because it's not really a human at that point. And it's not really a life at that point. And when does life truly begin? And so we start seeing the slippery slope occur. So we go from safe, legal, and rare. We go from it's a blob of cells, clump of tissue. We go from that to, look, we need abortion up until 20 weeks at least, but no one wants abortion after 20 weeks except for the life of the mother or rape or incest. And so you start hearing these things, and as you're having these conversations, you're going, or at least I was going, it seems like you're moving the goalpost. We've now gone from safe, legal, and rare to maybe up to 20 weeks. Well, then for a long time, you bipartisan support, you had folks say, look, the Hyde Amendment's a great amendment. Taxpayer dollars should not go to the funding of abortions, and everybody agrees. And even your staunch pro-choice people will go, yeah, that's probably okay. We shouldn't be, our tax dollars shouldn't be paying for abortions. Well, fast forward to 2019, and you have folks saying, you have Joe Biden, who spent 40 years in favor of the Hyde Amendment. He spent 40 years in his political career saying, look, I'm personally pro-life, coming out and saying, you know what, the Hyde Amendment is wrong, and my new health plan is actually going to cover abortion and force people to pay for it. And so we've gone from that. We've gone from safe, legal, and rare to anytime, any place, for any reason. So safe, legal, and rare to anytime, anywhere, for any reason. That's where we are in 2019. And oh, by the way, just to kind of throw a cherry on top, not only that, but we think you should pay for it as a taxpayer. Oh yeah, not only that, not just for citizens, but you should also pay for it for those that are getting into this country legally or illegally. You should just pay for everybody's abortion. So in the span, listen to this. This isn't just from 1973 to now. This is, say, from 2000 to now. This is, say, from 2008 to now. We are now at a place where people are saying, the same people that said no one is pro-abortion, well, I have no other way to label this. Now, when we were for safe, legal, and rare, when people were saying safe, legal, and rare, now I disagree with that, but at least there I'm going, okay, well, you're not too extreme. You don't want to see a lot of abortion. It was always interesting to me, if it's not a life, why do we care if it's rare? If you're not really ending a life, why does it matter if it's rare or frequent? But that's a whole nother discussion for another day. So in 2019, where we find ourselves is anytime, anywhere, for any reason, and you got to pay for it. And you know what? Just to make it all make you all feel better, not just for the citizens, not just for those that are here on visas, not just for those that are here because they are refugees from another country, but you also have to pay for it for just anyone. Anyone and everyone that finds themselves in this country. I mean, before long, they're going to say, you know what, we need to start sending aid to other countries so that we can help fund their abortions. That is where we are in the current discussion in 2019. Vox.com has an article just about that today. And when we come back from break, I'll have an article that talks about in one village, in an Indian village, no girls have been born for 3 months. You know why that is? It's not because they just happen to be having boys. It's because they're aborting every single baby that is a female for 3 months. You see, when we make the argument that you are going down a slippery slope, and then we're told, look, you are using straw man tactics. You are making up hypotheticals that aren't true. All you have to do is be able to read and look into history. We have a segment of our population that have literally gone from safe, legal, and rare to anytime, anywhere, for any reason, and you got to pay for it. And we're going to light up Ground Zero to celebrate death, to celebrate abortion, even though Ground Zero itself in New York memorializes 11 unborn children that died on 9/11. Think about how sick and twisted one has to be. So when folks tell me, look, no one is pro-abortion. Well, when you stand with policies like that, when your position is, we need more abortions for any reason, it doesn't matter. Health doesn't matter. The way you got pregnant doesn't matter. All that matters is you want to get rid of that pregnancy. We can take care of it. And you got to pay for it. I'm sorry. When the largest abortion clinic in the country fires their president because the president said, look, I think we need to focus on some of our other services. And they go, you know what? We really need someone that's going to get in here and focus on abortion more. When Planned Parenthood says we're not focusing on abortion enough, you know that someone is pro-abortion. Okay? We'll be back. Your love is like a fountain. It'll never run dry. It'll never run dry. Your love is moving mountains. Every day of my life. Every day of my life. Can I get a witness? So the conversation continues. I was going to talk about something else right now, but I've changed my mind. And you know what? It's my show. I have the liberty to do that. So it's free country. I'll cover the other stuff at some point. But right now, there's an interesting article over the National Review written by David French. Some of you may be familiar with his work. He's a Tennessean. He lives in Middle Tennessee. Good dude. And so he's got an article over the National Review called "In a Post-Roe World, Pro-Lifers would still have a lot of work left to do." And so that's the thing. A lot of folks, and we talked about it on this show, a lot of folks think, okay, Roe v. Wade's overturned, boom, we're done, abortion's over, we can close up the pregnancy centers, go home, celebrate in the streets, and boom, abortion is done. Well, that's not the case. That's why New York passed their law. That's why Virginia's passing theirs. That's why Illinois's passing theirs. That's why red states are passing heartbeat bills and laws that are seeking to ban abortion in their state, is because Roe v. Wade overturned, it just goes back to the states. But French makes some good points, and so I wanted to go through his article over at National Review. I think it would be helpful, and so let's start with there. So he says, while reversing the precedent would be a huge victory for the movement, it would have only a modest impact on the nationwide abortion rate. And then he says, ever since I've been a part of the pro-life movement, the movement's holy grail has been overturning Roe v. Wade. The nightmare scenario of abortion rights activists was the same, overturning Roe. But is the focus on Roe proportionate to its actual impact on American abortion rates? In other words, if Roe falls, how close would we be to a culture that protects life from conception until natural death? That's the ultimate goal of the pro-life movement, after all. Yesterday, the New York Times reported on the results of research that attempts to answer that question. A study by researchers from Middlebury College, the Guttmacher Institute and the Bixby Center for Global Reproductive Health found that in more than half of states, including the entire West Coast and Northeast, overturning Roe would have no real effect on abortion access, which we kind of know. For women in the South and much of the Midwest, the answer would be very different. Overturning Roe would allow a host of pro-life laws, such as trigger bills that ban abortion if Roe is overturned, and the various, quote, heartbeat bills that are blocked by existing Supreme Court precedent to go into effect. So what does this mean in terms of real numbers? The study estimates that post-Roe, the abortion rate would be 32.8% lower, quote, for the regions at high risk of banning abortions, end quote, and 12.8% lower nationwide. In raw numbers, that's more than 100,000 fewer abortions per year, which is a pro-life triumph. But am I the only pro-lifer who is sobered rather than enthused by the idea that ending Roe would cut nationwide abortions by less than 13%? How could that be? Haven't states passed waves of pro-life legislation? Wouldn't abortion bans have greater effect? Not really. A glance at state-by-state data tells us why. The states that have sought to ban or dramatically restrict abortion generally already have extremely low abortion rates. The big states of the West and Northeast that don't restrict abortion have much higher rates of the procedure. For example, in the states that have recently passed heartbeat bills or other significant pro-life statutes, the rates range from a high of 15 women per 1,000 in Georgia to a low of 6 women per 1,000 in Kentucky. Ohio's rate is 11 women per 1,000. Tennessee's is 10. Louisiana's is 10. Alabama's is 9. Mississippi's is 9. And Missouri's is 8. In other words, only one of these states matches the national abortion rate. The rest are well below it. By contrast, abortion is much more prevalent in the populous states of the coastal left. The rate in New York is an unbelievable 29 abortions per 1,000. New Jersey's not far behind with 26. California's 19. These numbers highlight two central realities in the fight for life. Cultural change precedes legal change, and cultural change is more potent than legal change. For example, according to CDC data, despite an expanding population, there were 202,000 fewer abortions in the United States in 2015 compared with 2006. That's a greater reduction than the one projected to result from overruling Roe, and it was accomplished while Roe remained intact. Consider this Guttmacher chart, which chronicles a long-term decline in the abortion rate of more than 50%. And so, put simply, the pro-life movement is one of the most successful cultural movements in American history. And French says, I'm not arguing that the law doesn't matter. Obviously it does, but it tends to follow and then amplify underlying cultural trends. A state has to be ready to pass abortion restrictions, and when it finally does, those restrictions save additional lives by diminishing the abortion industry's presence in the state. So what should pro-lifers do with all this information? Mainly, it helps us balance our efforts appropriately. We should all be able to agree that keeping the abortion rate line on the graph moving downward is our fundamental shared goal. The law can assist in the goal, but the law is not the principal means of achieving it. Note well that the line has kept moving downward through Democratic and Republican administrations alike, through waves of pro-life and pro-choice legislation. Certainly, there are many factors responsible for the decline apart from pro-life attitudes, but it is also true that the percentage of unintended pregnancies ending an abortion fell from 54% in 81 to 42% in 2011. Win the culture and you win the war, saving countless lives even before you can change a single law. That sentence right there is what we have been preaching from Hope Resource Center, what I've been preaching on this show for 4 years now. Look, I care deeply, and if you listen to the archive of this show, you know I care deeply about the way the politics shake out when it comes to life and abortion. I drive to Nashville. I have conversations with legislators in Nashville, in Washington. I care deeply. I go to Washington for the March for Life. I work and serve at a pregnancy center every single day. We care deeply about the politics of it all. I have stickers on my vehicle. We want the license plates. We want the votes. All of those things matter. But all of those things, apart from engaging in our communities, will mean nothing. Nothing. Just like French says here, win the culture and you win the war, saving countless lives even before you can change a single law. So the states that are seeing less abortions, well, why are we seeing less abortions in these states? There's a number of reasons. Birth control is certainly one of those reasons. A lot of people think the younger generation are just sleeping with everybody. That is not the case. They'd rather text than lay down with somebody. And so we see some of that. We're also seeing that in some of these states, in Missouri, they have one abortion clinic. Kentucky, one abortion clinic. The whole state. We're seeing laws be passed. We're seeing things happen in these states that are, in essence, demagnetizing the state for abortion. So some states out there are destination states for abortion. So they're not only attracting people to receive abortions, they're promoting it. They're marketing it. Come to our state. Get your abortion. And then you have other states that are saying, look, we're going to make it virtually impossible for an abortion clinic to operate within the borders of our state. And then you, of course, just like David French was talking about, we have population. And so in some states, you just have a larger population. And a larger population with lax laws means more abortions. In New York City, I believe they said they had more abortions than births this past year. That's a problem. And so culture is where it's at. That we have to start there. That's why we open pregnancy centers. You know how Planned Parenthood says, look, we are about women's health. We are an organization about women's health first and foremost. But in reality, as we saw with the firing of their new president, it's really about abortion and policy. They believe that abortion is directly connected and related to politics. It is a political issue for them. There's no divorcing it of the politics. It is a political issue. The pro-life movement says, look, politics matter. It means a lot. We got to be engaged in that process. But it is not the be-all, end-all. How we're going to see abortion numbers continue to decline is loving our neighbor, is opening pregnancy centers, is serving women in our communities that are facing unplanned pregnancies, is being there for them, is removing obstacles, is providing free services, is providing baby showers, is providing care, is referring them to an OB. It's doing all of those things. On top of voting, on top of the stickers, on top of the license plates, all of those things are good, but those things by themselves, and I sound like a broken record, will do nothing to see abortion be unthinkable and go away and be a footnote in a history book. And Lord, I pray that for my kids, for my grandkids, for my great-grandkids, that is what they will know of abortion. The same way I read about slavery, the same way I read about women's suffrage, the same way I read about civil rights movement, as a footnote to see that our country made a shift to correct the problem is the way I want my kids to see when it comes to abortion, that this country made a shift. And would that shift be led and be charged by the church and not the Oval Office? I pray that that's the case. We'll be back. God keep my head. I've got water. So the conversation today hopefully has been a helpful one as we looked at a number of issues going around the country. And, you know, it's one of those things we talk every single week, and every single week there's new material. There's new things to talk about. And I think that even points to the fact that we are seeing a shift. I think we are at a place where culture is ready to see something change. And I had a long meeting today with a few other pregnancy center leaders about some marketing strategies and things that we're going to be hopefully doing in the coming weeks and months and to help the state of Tennessee be better equipped and better able to serve the women in this state by helping them with information, educational information and services and all of those things. And so, but as we have this conversation, what we're finding with the current generation is they are seeking realness. They want to see things that are authentic. They don't want to hear an organization say we care deeply about women's health, and then behind closed doors they're saying abortion, 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 abortion. They don't want pregnancy centers to act as if they are abortion clinics. And then they get into our doors and we go, oh yeah, by the way, we don't perform abortions. That's why oftentimes I'm on here going, look, you got me. I am unapologetically anti-abortion. I don't hide from that. Because I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And so if we start there, then we can have dialogue. We can have a conversation. But in the span of 10, 15 years, you go from safe, legal, and rare to anytime, anywhere, for any reason, and you're going to pay for it. That's a huge jump. That's a huge jump even for woke America. That's a huge jump for a generation that's been told safe, legal, and rare, a generation that has grown up seeing their siblings via ultrasound images. It's a big jump to go, hold on, safe, legal, and rare. Well, why do we care that it's rare if it's not a human? And now I've been seeing my siblings, my own children even, in 4D, 3D images while they're still in the womb. Well, now doctors can actually perform spinal surgeries on infants inside the womb. And you're telling me that we should be able to just end that life. Look, this isn't just ending a pregnancy. People say that a lot. Well, abortion is simply ending a pregnancy. Well, what would you call a pregnancy? What are you pregnant with? What are you expecting? When people say, how far along are you? It's because there's a life growing inside of you, a real human being. When people say, do you know what you're having? They're not saying, is it a horse? Is it a cat? Is it a dog? Do we know if it's a human? No, they say, do you know what you're having? Because we all know it's a human. Is it a boy or a girl? You see, language matters. But we're in a society now where we've thrown that out the window. And we've allowed for one of the largest political platforms in this country to be transformed to one that says, we used to say safe, legal, and rare. Now we say anytime, anywhere, for any reason, and you're going to pay for it. That's the platform. Now that goes against everything that every poll says and what the bulk of the country believes, which is why I think there's new stories and articles, and why we saw what happened with Planned Parenthood last week is because they know they're no longer on the offense. They're on their heels and they're nervous about what's coming. But see, they see their answer, their hope, their goal, everything in the politics of it all. And we as the church see it. We're operating in a sense of, look, we already know how this ends. So our posture is one of victory, not one of defeat. And that's why it's just a fun thing to be a part of this pro-life movement. We'll talk to you next week. God keep my head.